America is strong and we're respected overseas, again because of our people and because of the millions and millions in Eastern Europe and other places who yearn and hope for freedom and who look to us for, as a beacon, and again look to President Ford's leadership because it's based on experience. And if I would move from that quickly to tax reform or whatever. Again, we're talking about a man with a record, talking about a man who wants real tax reform. I offered an amendment for the president on the Senate floor this year, which would increase the personal exemption for every taxpayer and every dependent from $750 to $1,000. The Democrats voted it down almost on straight party lines. And when Governor Carter stands up to tell you about tax reform, he doesn't tell you, he doesn't remind you, the Democrats have controlled the Congress for the past 22 years, and they control the committees. And they control the tax committees. And they've controlled those committees not only the past 22 years running, but 40 out of the past 44 years. And if we want tax reform, if we want cuts in spending, then we need Belden Bell and others like him in the Congress of the United States. Clear pineapple juice and drink it. It's a lot better for you than peanut butter. And and as I always say, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth either. So that's but I want to tell the housewives, you're always looking for bargains. I got a feeling that come next Wednesday, peanut butter is going to be cheaper. So, and pineapple juice may be out of sight. So you better stock up on pineapple juice this week and buy your peanut butter next week. But I'm always so touched by Governor Carter when he stands up and he says that he's just an average American, and says to the working men and women, and there are going to be a lot of working men and women on our side, as he says, these people, our national tax system's a disgrace. And he doesn't tell you, as I said, that the Democrats have controlled the Congress. But he said during his acceptance speech in New York City that our system was a disgrace. And the next week he went up to New York City, went back to New York City, went down to Plains to refuel, and then he went back to New York City, and he had a little lunch there with some small businessmen, Henry Ford and some other... And they couldn't get into McDonald's, so they went down to the little place called Club 21. And there he met with Henry Ford and these other 51 small businessmen. And Jimmy said to Henry, he said, "Don't worry about any tax changes. It'll take me a year to get that worked out." It's the same man who said the week before our system was a disgrace and he was going to do something about it. He was going to take care of those awful loopholes and the rich and all those who escaped their fair share of taxes. About the same time, we discovered that Carter's, and he made it public, so I don't criticize him for that, but his tax liability, his tax bill for 1975 was $58,000. I imagine most of you paid about $58,000 in 1975. But again, he's just a small businessman dealing in peanuts. But he didn't pay $58,000. He took $41,000 off that $58,000 and sent in $17,000. Now, he did it very legally, totally legitimate. It's called the investment tax credit. And I raised a question, others raised a question, and Carter was asked about it, and he said, "Well, that's why we need to reform our tax laws." So, he knows a loophole when he sees one. I just ask, what does he mean by tax reform? He also said that most Americans didn't want their taxes lowered. Anybody here doesn't want their taxes lowered? We brought a doctor along to treat you if you hold up your hand. But that's what Governor Carter's been telling the working men and women of America. And he also said that all income ought to be treated alike. That sounds very fair and just. Unless you're a senior citizen or unless you bought stock and you're saving that stock and you're going to sell that stock. Now, if you did that, you'd get what we call the capital gains treatment, just pay tax on half the gain. Not under Governor Carter. He's going to treat all that income the same. It's going to double your tax. And if you own farmland and sell farmland, or if you're in the dairy business or otherwise own breeding stock and sell that, and hundreds of other examples, you're going to pay a flat rate. So I just suggest take a look at the record. Take a look at the Ford Dole record, and it's there. Take a look at the Carter record on defense, where he would cut $5 to $7 billion. And my friend, Senator Mondale, and he is my friend, I kept telling him that during the debate. But he wouldn't listen. I did pick up a little cold air standing in the draft for 75 minutes, but all that hot air. But my friend, Senator Mondale, who will be in the Senate again, of course, next year, has voted against virtually every new weapon system, whether it's the B-1 bomber, or the C-5A, or the Trident submarine, or the Poseidon missile, or the main tank. He's voted to cut defense time after time after time, and that may sound good. That could be very good if Russia was also cutting their defense budget, and we knew for certain what the People's Republic of China was doing. But I say that Governor Carter and Senator Mondale would weaken America with their constant efforts on cutting defense. And the Mondale record is there. He can't deny it. So let's think about our defense. Let's think about peace. Let's think about strength. Let's think about moral leadership. I don't want to go through all of Governor Carter's interviews because he had so many. Some were illustrated, some are just plain. But he's already apologized for the Playboy interview. Said if he had to do it over again, he wouldn't do it. And I thought it was bad judgment. I don't care what he says to Playboy, but I think it's bad judgment for someone seeking the presidency to have the interview. But again, to be fair to Governor Carter, that only affects Governor Carter. And what he does, it affects only him. I don't care about. But if he were to become president, then he's going to make judgments that affects everyone in this room, or could affect everyone in this room. And if his judgment's that bad on Playboy, I don't know how bad it'd be if he had something important to decide. And I think we ought to keep that in mind. So, it's been a pleasure to visit with you, and we hope to have a chance to go around and shake hands and otherwise encourage you to vote for President Ford. I would only conclude by saying that I've known President Ford for 16 years. He's known to be a man of total openness and honesty and candor and confidence, competence. I don't know of a man in the Congress or politics or private life who's been subjected to more scrutiny, more investigation than President Ford. And he comes out a winner all the time, 100% honest, a man of unquestioned integrity, the kind of a man America needs, Democrats and Republicans and independents. So when you think about it, and think about Governor Carter saying that all church property except the church itself should be taxed, he hasn't clarified that, he just denies it. He didn't say whether he's talking about church hospitals or church schools or church homes for the aged or what. Or whether he wants to give amnesty for draft dodgers. I've got a little quarrel with him there. I think we've got to get our priorities right in America. And as long as we have hundreds missing in Southeast Asia, I think we better concern ourselves first with those forgotten Americans rather than those who forgot America and left this country. And there may be some in this room for gun control. I don't think there are very many in this room for gun control, but Carter is, and Mondale's for it. There are probably some in this room for school prayer, but Mondale's against the amendment, and Carter's against the amendment. And I just say, take a look at it. Any way you slice it, they want to nibble away at your freedom. They want more government, bigger programs, more spending. Over $100 billion just for five programs. $100 billion. And who's going to pay for it? I'll tell you who's going to pay for it. Middle-income taxpayers on the one end, or those who live on fixed incomes through inflation on the other. And I'm talking about senior citizens and others on fixed incomes. And President Ford's a man of compassion. He wants catastrophic health insurance. He wants increases in Social Security. He doesn't want to bust the system, though. So anyway, as I said, you slice it, Ford comes out on top. And I would just conclude by saying, if you'll work for President Ford just for 6 days, six more days, he'll work for you with pride for four more years. Thank you very much.
Why did you advocate
it? I wanted the farmer, if he had to pay his bills, to be able to get the
alone. And hold on to each feet till the price got back up around $4 a bushel. Now, whether it's going to get up there, I don't know.
Are you able to hold on to him?
Sure. He could have sold him twice out. His cost of production in many cases is about $3 a bushel.
Is that average? Is that
I think it depends on whether you include the value of the land and things like that.
John McAllister, and we're happy back in Nebraska for our second trip to Nebraska since the campaign started. I don't know the recent polls in this state, but the last time I was here, the Ford Dole ticket was well ahead of any more statewide polls. It's still ahead.
Still ahead.
So I have 17 points in, according to Omaha World Herald. But
how are you doing?
I hope very well, but I think very close. It's going to be determined by who votes, who turns out the vote, and that's why I'm so grateful that Senator Dole is here to add some spice to our Lincoln rally to get people eager and excited and out to vote.
Mr. McAllister, did you feel that you needed to have him here?
When you're running even, you need everything you can get, and I'm grateful for Bob Dole to be here.
Senator Dole, are you pleased?
One of the target states?
Just one of your target states, like the ones you mentioned last time.
No, this is one that I asked. I think we're ahead here, but John's a good friend of mine. I hope I can be helpful, and I suggest that we stop by and say hello on the way to New Mexico.
It was your idea then, Senator, to come to Lincoln?
Oh, yeah, we want to, of course, beef up the Ford Dole ticket, and I'll be making a speech on agriculture, which I trust will drift into other states in the Midwest. But I thought it'd be a good stop on the way to New Mexico.
Senator, do you think you'll say anything about agriculture that you haven't said before?
Got to wait for time.
I'll try. You know, it'll be a very good speech.
It is.
Yeah, I know you'll be interested.
You're thrilled that what you said about agriculture has reassured farmers about the Green Bond and has made an impact.
I think so. I mean, I don't know. I've read a couple of accounts where there's some indication that I've been helpful in farm areas.
Are you as strong, Senator, in farm areas as you think you should be at this stage?
Well, we're stronger than we were. And I think we're probably, maybe not as strong as we've been in the past, but I think we're strong enough to win nearly all the Midwest states.
Senator, you said that the only way the Democrats have been able to keep unemployment low is through a wartime economy. How low can you keep unemployment low?
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah, that's right.
That's really
right
helpful.
On time. We got there a little late. I can't hear the question.
Well, you couldn't hear the question. You said that only with the wartime economy has President Ford been able, the Democrats been able to keep unemployment low. With peace that President Ford has promised, how low can you keep unemployment, sir?
Well, I don't know. I think we're on the road to hopefully 4% or less. It's going to take some time, though, to get it through the private sector.
How long?
How long before we arrive at that? I don't know. No, I really don't know. I don't think anyone knows. I didn't hear the introduction, but I know it was good, so I appreciate that very much, too. I might say at the outset that when we were in Sioux City, we've been so many places, I can't remember the precise date we were there, but John was there, and I suggest at that time I'd like to stop in Nebraska one more time, and he consented, and I'm here, and John's going to be elected to the Senate, and I'm very thankful for that. And as I walked in, I saw another fellow who's going to be elected named Lee Terry was standing out in the hall, and I said, Lee, come in with me, so I'm happy to have him here. I want to take just a few minutes of your time to touch on a matter of concern to all the Midwest, and that matter is agriculture. Then I want to visit just for another 1 or 2 minutes, and I won't keep you more than 10 minutes altogether, and I appreciate very much your coming. I think, first of all, it's fair to say that despite some of the problems we've had, that the 2 years of President Ford's administration have been among the very best years in American farm history. And during the next 4 years, under the Ford-Dole administration, farm policy will continue to stress full production, fair prices for consumers, and good income for farmers. And I've been on the Senate Ag Committee for 8 years and the House Committee for 8 years, and I know as we've had hearings after hearing after hearing, I know of John McAllister's interest in small business and agriculture, and I can say this, that for 40-some years, the American farmer was shackled with government production controls. He was shackled with cutbacks and curtailment of growth in the agricultural plant. And every time somebody talked about stability and stability for farm income, my farmers in Kansas and those in Nebraska understood that meant less income, and it was more and more unlikely that the family farmer could make it. I think we have a sound farm program at this time. I think next year, of course, we'll rewrite the program. It does need to be updated. We need to change the loan levels and the target prices. But all in all, the farmer's been freed from dependence on the federal treasury not to produce. The farmer wants to produce. He wants to make his profit from the marketplace. And the Republican farm policy is that he should have that opportunity. I can speak about farmers in my state of Kansas and certainly Nebraska as much alike. We've shown that we can do without government controls. We produce enough to feed more than 215 million Americans, plus millions more overseas. And I think the statistics are very impressive. 60 million acres before the Republican administration started were idle. They've been released, and nearly 40 million acres have been brought back into production. And totally acreage for major crops has climbed from 291 million acres in 1969 to 335 million acres this year. Now, we've had an increase in our farm exports. They've gone up to $22 billion a year. And one area the president has said that I would have an active role in would be in the field of agricultural exports. And I guess I would be and will be when I become the vice president of the United States, sort of an international salesman, because I understand, and President Ford understands, that the prosperity of rural America and farmers and producers lies with our export markets. And I think that's an area that we need to develop more and more. I would only say finally, and I have a written text which I've given to the press, there are just a couple of things that concern me about the Carter-Mondale ticket insofar as agriculture is concerned. First, we've had a statement by Governor Carter in Reader's Digest, and he talks about the inflationary grain sales to Russia. He said those sales were excessive. That indicates to me that Governor Carter, had he been president, would not have sold the grain to Russia 2 or 3 years ago. In addition to that, Senator Mondale has introduced a bill that would call for export licensing, which would be a legislative embargo placed upon crops if the stocks got down below a certain level. So I cite the record of Governor Carter, I cite his statements, and I cite the record of Senator Mondale. I think we want to maintain the high level of U.S. exports. And let me say, insofar as President Ford's concerned, I think the embargo was a mistake. I said so at the time. I didn't wait until it became in the heat of a political campaign, as others did, say that I felt the embargoes were a mistake. But President Ford has clarified that. And I'm here to say that there will be no embargoes unless there's some national emergency under the Ford-Dole administration. And I can say that. And while I'm at that point, I thought it was strange that Senator Bob Byrd, who's a very fine senator from West Virginia, the leader of the Senate Democrats, would come to Nebraska in an effort to help someone be elected in an essentially rural state, because Senator Byrd is the father of SRES 234, which would impose rather strict restraints on exports of farm commodities, wheat and other commodities. And I kind of wonder, when you ask for that kind of help, if you're running for the Senate in Nebraska, if you really understand what it's all about in the state of Nebraska. And I know that... yeah, he did a lot of fiddling. He is a good fiddler. And well, he is. I say that very... with great pride. But we can't fiddle around in our farm program, and we can't... we've got to concern ourselves with the consumer. And I'm concerned about the consumer, too. But as John knows and Lee knows, the farmer sells everything wholesale and buys everything retail. And he must make a profit. If he can't make a profit, he's not going to stay on the farm. If he doesn't stay on the farm, consumers are going to see prices go up and up and up and up. And that's why it's so important that we maintain a strong farm economy. So I would only conclude that part by saying I'm going to have a very vital role to play, and I'll be playing that role with President Ford and with John McAllister and Lee Terry and other good Republicans we elect and send to Congress next Tuesday. Now, we're not happy with the prices of wheat or corn or any other grain for that matter right now, but yesterday we did, a sale was announced of 37 million bushels of wheat or wheat equivalent to Egypt. That's about 5% of the anticipated carryover. That's progress, and there's going to be more progress. We're going to push PL 480 sales, food for peace sales, and commercial exports until we get that carryover down and get the prices up. Now, having said that, I saw some signs when I walked in about MIAs and about the task force, and I can only tell you that one other specific responsibility that's been assigned to me by President Ford, and that has to do with an accounting of missing in action and others in Southeast Asia. And that's an area that I know something about. I think I've probably worked with most of the families. I've had contact with a great number of families, and I don't want to boast about it because I haven't done all that much, but I was there when the families needed help, and I tried to be helpful. And hope I have been of some help. But that is the other specific assignment that President Ford said I would have as a Vice President of the United States. And I'll say to the families here and anyone else that when Governor Carter stands up in Seattle and said he's for a blanket pardon, that's not the Ford Dole policy. We're not for blanket pardons or blanket amnesty or blanket clemency. It just happens, in my view, we've got our priorities mixed up. We ought to concern ourselves first with those forgotten Americans in Southeast Asia and not those who evaded the draft or otherwise left this country in a time of need. And that's the position of the Ford Dole administration, and that will be the position of the Ford Dole administration next year. I also think it's well to point out who will have the preponderance of influence in the Carter administration, should he be elected. You know, they once asked George Meany why he didn't run for president. He said, why step down? He's got a pretty good grip on the other party right now. He has great influence on and will have on the Carter administration. I kind of like the right-to-work laws we have in Kansas and Nebraska. I think people ought to have a right... Americans ought to have a right to join a union or not to join a union. It ought to be voluntary. If they want to join, that's fine. I don't get very excited about the gun control measures in the Democratic platform, but Senator Mondale does and Governor Carter does. I don't think we ought to have registration and licensing of handguns, but they do. I don't think most Nebraskans feel that way either. Let me tell you about another little proposition out in California. It's called Proposition 14. It may cost Carter that state, because what it says, in essence, is if you own a farm and have farm labor, that organizers come on your property from up to 3 hours a day to try to organize farm workers. And that sort of treads on property rights, and that's only the beginning, because don't let anyone kid you. If that succeeds in California, there's going to be pressure if Carter's elected to try it somewhere else or make it a federal law. And I would say to the Nebraska farmer, or any other farmers in this audience, or those who want to become farmers, oh, I believe in unionism. I'm not opposed to that. But I just think there ought to be some respect for property rights, and we ought to draw the line somewhere, and we shouldn't turn it all over to organized labor or labor leaders in particular. And I feel very strongly about that. And I would only say to the young people in this audience,